How does depression affect marriage? For many, it can cause a relational breakdown or worse. But for Joe Padilla, his wife's depression led to a plethora of research, which culminated in his wife's healing and the development of his organization called the Grace Alliance. How did they do it? I'm Kendra Semin. Stay tuned for Padilla's encouraging advice.
Since 2005, BIC Media Solutions has become the leader in helping faith-based industry partners produce meaningful media in the form of books, films, and TV. The primary goal for the books and movies produced are to help enhance lives of people. The revised edition of It's What We Do Together That Counts includes insights into the successes of more than 100 executives and entrepreneurs. It's What We Do Together That Counts draws upon their life experiences and shows that any form of adversity can be overcome through hard work, perseverance, and kindness to others. Isn't that just the truth? Purchase It's What We Do Together That Counts on Amazon.com and BICMediaSolutions.com. Again, that's BICMediaSolutions.com. You can also purchase the Kindle version through Kindle eBooks or listen to it on Audible. On Friday, December 13th only, just on that one day, Friday, December 13th, download the free ebook of It's What We Do Together That Counts, the BIC Alliance Story. Log in to Amazon Kindle and download the free ebook. This is Steve Green on behalf of BIC Media Solutions.
Welcome back to our mental health series on the Charisma News podcast. Today's guest is Joe Padilla. He's the co-founder of the Grace Alliance, which provides resources and tools to empower Christians who are struggling with their mental health. So, Joe, welcome, and thank you for joining us on today's show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So why don't you just start by telling our listeners a little about yourself?
Yeah, well, like you mentioned, I am the co-founder of the Grace Alliance, which is a mental health Grace Alliance. Everybody just knows us by the Grace Alliance. And really, again, what we're doing is we're innovating how the church renews lives and families of all those who are dealing with anxiety, depression, and any type of mental health journey. And what we're doing that is through science and faith and integrating them together, really knowing how it works and what works to renew lives. So that's kind of, we've been doing that for about 10 years now, and obviously we'll have a more deeper conversation about all this. But other than that, I was, before Grace Alliance, I was a missionary for about 10 years overseas, and my wife and I and our family, of course, and then a couple of years here, local leadership within the States, and I have 5 kids, and they're all girls, so
wow.
Everybody always thinks that's quite fascinating.
That's neat. There are 4 girls and 2 boys in my family, so I also come from a fairly big family, but that's a lot of girls.
Okay, good.
That's
yeah,
exciting.
A lot of girls. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. So did you come to Christ at a young age? Did you kind of grow up in church?
Yeah, actually, no. That's a whole other story in itself, but my journey is basically, I kind of grew up in a single-parent home. My mom, she worked really hard to take care of us and things like that, but it was a very difficult environment. And so through that experience, I had a lot of problems, and I actually had some mental health challenges and tried to commit suicide when I was about 17 years old, actually. Mm-hmm. And then in that experience, I had a pretty interesting experience with Jesus at that moment. I didn't grow up in the church. It didn't any of that, but from there, I got adopted into a kind of a foster family type of thing, not official. And they basically helped me restore my life, school and everything, my family and things like that. And so that's kind of my background. So I didn't really grow up in the church, don't have any of these things. I just, at obviously the breaking point of life, I mm-hmm. fell in love with Jesus. And then from there, it just grew into a way of life, not perfect, but just wanting to love and serve others that have gone through those pits as well.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's interesting that you yourself have also dealt with some mental health struggles, because I know that ultimately was not the reason you founded Grace Alliance. You co-founded it because it was your wife who was suffering mental health challenges,
right,
which led you, you talk about this on your website, led you to gain new insight, led to your wife's recovery. You did a lot of research. So could you go into your personal experience with that? How did that affect your walk with Jesus?
Yeah. So so basically, yeah, for all those that probably don't know the full story with that, while we were in on the field and on our missions, that my wife was struggling with anxiety and depression for a long time. And that just basically got worse through the years to the point where we needed to come home. That's what literally brought us home off the field. And then so while we were in the States and doing ministry leadership here, we got the better resources from the medical community and even from ministry support from our church and all those types of things. But she just didn't get any better. It almost seemed like it was getting worse. And then that led to a point where after 2 years being home here in the States, then we were kind of let go so that I could focus on taking care of her and our family and trying to figure out things. So I think, you know, when at this point it had been about 8 to 10 years of just constant suffering, that now here I am, I've lost my job. We've lost our vision and calling and ministry. I don't know what to do. I'm quite in despair. I actually went through another very deep challenge, mental health challenge, with a lot of anxiety because of the situation that we were in with her condition. Basically just wiped us all out, obviously to the point where we couldn't be in ministry anymore. And so, you know, it, when you hit that point, it's it kind of, I lost 15 pounds and I'm on antidepressants, you know, I'm trying to get my life together. I'm trying to take care of her. And it was just one of those, like, hey, this is the book of Job. All living this. We were loving Jesus. We were doing everything, not necessarily doing anything wrong, not that we're, you know, trying to work for goodness or anything like that, but it, in this regard, it's like, what's going on and why did we lose everything? And so in those, you know, you hit these kind of suffering moments, and it's those are the places that sometimes where God kind of just starts to change some perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back now, I think at that point, that my experience with Jesus at that point was very renewing, very restorative, and very reforming. I started experiencing him in ways that just challenged the things that I was taught or that I learned. And as I look back, I think it's almost like Jesus was saying, Joe, I am not the God of your theology. I am the God of you. Mm-hmm. Follow me. And so from there, that's where I began to really dive deeper into the word and understanding this kind of new way of thinking as far as how to love her well and how to love my family, how to do all this. I started researching and looking at all the mental health aspects, neuroscience, psychology, research, stuff that we just don't ever see or even talk about, even in the mainstream. So basically, from that experience, that's where I kind of applied it to my wife and my family and just tried to live this out. And I wasn't necessarily looking for the cure or the healing or anything like that. We were beyond that point. It was just like, how do we make this work? So then after about a year and a half of doing all this, that's, you know, my wife was getting better. And she kind of said, you know, I feel like myself again. She had weaned off of about 6 medications down to 1 medication. And she was, our lives were coming back after 10 plus years or something like that. We were suffering and she was suffering. We're now at a new place and a healed place. And one of a neuroscientist friend of mine said, you know, Joe, that from where your wife was to where she is now, that's a clinical miracle. You just never see that from her condition that she was in. You just don't ever see that. And so, and I'm just thinking, it was really simple. I was just learning and doing all these things. And then from there, that experience, I guess that's where you get that Jesus nudge of the heart. Hey, we can do this for others.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the experience there. But it was really kind of a slow reformation of thinking in a new way of how to really help her, my family, and myself in the whole process, and to see this full transformation for our lives.
It's definitely an amazing story how you learn to see purpose in your suffering. Obviously, you questioned God in the beginning, like Job did, and you doubted, like, why am I going through this? I'm doing everything right to my ability. Like, we're not perfect, but I don't deserve that. You know, you go through those things, like, what did I do? And then you start to realize, okay, like, I just need to make it through one step at a time, day by day, and see what God has planned through this, because he allows it for a reason. So I think that's really inspiring to see what you could turn that into and what you could get out of all of that. And here you have this amazing ministry that I'm sure is helping a ton of people out of all that. So we see how God has used that in incredible ways already. So you mentioned like antidepressants and that kind of thing. And I want to get into medication and therapy a little bit, because that's one of the reasons I started this podcast, is I was seeing in churches that became very much a taboo topic. There was a stigma surrounding medication and therapy, because some churches and pastors would say, oh, well, you just need to pray more. You need to have more faith. You shouldn't be on medication. But obviously, you and your wife had a different experience. It did help you get out of that really deep, dark place. And now you were able to kind of wean off the medication. So what would you have to say to people who think that, oh, medication and therapy, automatically we have to write that off, that, you know, we're not trusting Jesus enough? Why would you say that that's not the right response?
Well, I think because there is a valid reality of medicine. It's like our family doctor, who is a devout believer who loves Jesus incredibly, and he says that, you know, if God only heals people just miraculously through their faith, then why did he give me the gift and talent and the intellect to be a doctor? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think there is a, I think we sometimes we kind of separate medicine and faith a lot of times, and it's only medicine is kind of this last resort type thing. I actually wrote a blog on this on our website about medication. What does the Bible actually say about this? And mm-hmm. give a little bit more full picture, so that we see the role of medicine through the, not only just the New Testament, but even the Old Testament. There was a value on medical devices or medicinal purposes of different things that were used. And we cover this topic in our curriculum. And so we show a story where God uses medication for healing. And again, the blog that I wrote that covers a little bit more of that. So we see that there is a principle of God that he will come and meet us in supernatural ways at times. However, sometimes that supernatural way will often include medicine, and it's not a failure of faith. It's actually a place of faith to use these resources and things like this. And so there, and it's not just about medicine, but, you know, when you're looking at even therapy, you know, we know that the research shows that these things can improve the quality of life. And I think that's the desire of God. And why not we use these resources that we have the technology and advancement. Now, are these medications perfect? Absolutely not. You know, so we don't question people when they take Tylenol for a headache, but mm-hmm. why would we question them when they take medication for a mental agony? You know, I think it's, you know, we're not seeing them as relying on them as God himself. You know, it's kind of like, God, you've given some things here that can help improve my life, just as you've given, you have produced the fruits and the vegetables and all these things to supply health in my body. Why not some of these other things that could be medicinal and help us through the journey? And it's not just relying on these things alone. We look at this from a whole health or whole person approach. And mm-hmm. so it's just one area. So I have met brilliant professionals, even not people who are non-believers. They just have an incredible view of how they use medicines or therapy and things like that, and they have results in seeing people's lives get better. So I think this is just one place where I think we just need to broaden the conversation, not just attack people that don't agree. Mm-hmm. So let's keep it a dialogue, and let's look at where God's heart is on this matter, not the rules of faith themselves.
Yeah, because I think it could be even a blessing in disguise that God is providing the medicine and or the doctors and people there to help you through that. It's not, like you said, necessarily always a supernatural miracle. So sometimes we have to be open to alternatives. So I think you explained that really well. And in your experience, have you had any type of or experienced any type of stigma surrounding mental health within Christian circles or within the church? Because I know a lot of people have.
Yeah, no, yes, I have experienced it. I've heard almost everything, not everything, but I've heard everything in a lot of different ways. It's just unfortunate, and it really is an education thing, and it's just an unawareness aspect of this. So I think it's a conversation that just really needs to happen more in the church, so that we get around what we think about these things. And when I look at stigma, it there's all kinds of factors, but it usually falls into two kind of categories. What I hear. First being, it's kind of the spiritual reason. So there's all these kinds of variables of why, and it's always spiritualized. And when it's usually used in a spiritual aspect, it's usually putting failure and blame on the person that's sick, and they have done something that's deserving of this type of judgment or this type of aspect of why they're seeing these things. So I think it's just not the full picture that we need. And then the second area has to do with medical liability. You know, they will accept their condition, but we just will keep just them out because that's very strange stuff. We don't understand that. And they just need their own place where they need to be. Because if we have them here, that might be just liable because we just don't understand that. So I think it's just that's what I'm saying. We just have to have a better conversation of how we talk about what mental health means, what it is, and a spectrum of what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being open that, hey, we're not going to shame you if you come forward and you're open about being depressed or anxious or even OCD or ADHD or bipolar, you name it. And I think a lot of people are afraid to even just open up in church because they think they're going to get that shame and that backlash, and they're going to be told, oh, well, you're just not living your Christian life well enough or something like that. And that could not be the case all the time. So I think it's good that more and more pastors, it seems like, are open from the pulpit with their own struggles and saying, I have had panic attacks and I have dealt with depression. And I think we need more of that so that people can feel like they're safe in church. And even if a church may not have, you know, mental health counselors on staff who professionally can help their people, they can at least do the best they can to refer out and help them that way. So what other action steps would you encourage Christians struggling with depression to take?
Well, yeah, I think, with understanding this, and this is what we, you know, help through our curriculums and things like that. And I've done a lot of coaching with individuals, and that's part of one of our curriculums called the Thrive Workbook. But the thing to first look at this is that you have to understand that depression, anxiety is not just a mental thing. Mm-hmm. It is a whole health effect. So we want to look at the whole person and the whole health approach on this. So, you know, it's so that we can respond to this. But in this process, so I break it down into kind of four P's in this sense. But the first place to begin before we get into that is first realizing it's okay that you're experiencing depression, anxiety. It's a normal reaction to different things that you might be going through, circumstances or some difficult mental narratives that just play on, whether it came from a friend that said this or that. And there are some other aspects that just seem that run in your family, and that's just an ongoing thing. But it's okay. It doesn't mean you're failing or you're failing God. It's just it's a place where we can begin a new process of getting some things in place, and that you can accept it, not fight against it. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I would say, you know, this is in the four P's, is the first P is the professionals. I think it's important that we look at the resources that are available for us when we have like we talked earlier, like it's not a bad thing that you might need some medication. It's not a bad thing that you might need to talk to a professional or a therapist or any of that thing. But again, to broaden the aspect of professionals, if you do have the means, could you see a nutritionist? Could you see a work on some fitness aspects? Because everything we do from the whole health really does impact the brain. Mm-hmm. And so I think so the first area I would say is what professionals can be very helpful in this process. The second P I would say is people. One of the aspects of depression, anxiety, what that does is because of the shame and the stigma and all those things, it makes people want to isolate because they don't feel understood. So I think in having people, it's just who are the people that you can be around that add value to your life and you can add value to theirs. And so the people that I would say, like the people that you can easily connect with in a daily basis so that you're just not isolated. So whether it's family or the store clerk that you always see and you smile and have this cordial conversation, something that's connecting you to community that you live in, whether even if you're just passing by or something, but it's something regular that you can connect with other people. And then second aspect of people is people who resonate and can relate to your story. And that's why we have our grace groups, and they're all over the nation, and they're spreading even internationally. And it's a place where we give that conversation. It's a kind of a safe place as believers that we can talk about what this journey means, what this journey looks like. And we are not here to judge because we all understand what this is.
Yeah.
So, and that the curriculum helps them guide them through to get their lives to get better and improve life and things like that. And so just having those people, even if it's not a grace group or anything like that, that we have, what's a similar group that's in your area or a similar resource? Because those people that resonate and relate to that journey provide a lot of comfort more than people, obviously, that just don't understand. And the bottom line about people is that all the research shows that the most powerful ingredient and the common denominator of mental health recovery is community. And so it really matters that we really try to get out of the cycle of isolation and just get around people. I'm not talking about show up at all the church events and things like that, because that could be overwhelming. But the connection to people that are part of your daily life and people that resonate and relate to your journey. The third P I would say is live purposeful. And what I mean by that is think about an athlete. How do they live? So they live in such a way with certain habits, different things, because the game matters to them. And so and it's not so much that they're trying to win, which is their goal, obviously, but it's because they want to be mentally sharp and physically resilient in all aspects so that they can win the game. So in the same way, you know, Paul encourages us in Romans, you know, we are more than conquerors. And by the way, that's in context of suffering and trials and affliction. Okay. So what does it mean to live like we are more than conquerors? So how would we live in that regard as we're going through suffering, as we're going through trials and different things? So that's where it's like, okay, hey, I need sleep. I need to eat better. I need to maybe take a walk. I need to break the cycle of what depression wants or depression, you know, dictates to, hey, let me just, I can accept this, but I can walk this out and little habits. And that's when I'm coaching people, we work on all these aspects, and you'd be surprised how one area can just really impact the whole thing. So anyways, and I think that this whole aspect of this living purposeful with the whole person approach, the research just shows us over and over how it impacts the brain. And living like this can keep the brain fit and even for long-term decreasing the risk of Alzheimer's and even dementia. You know, it really does matter when you look at all these things from a neuroscience and the scientific factors of what we're seeing and knowing about these things. And there's all kinds of really neat research I can go into, but the last P I would say is perspective. And I think it's, we've got to learn the mental tools to learn how to reframe out of those self-negative narratives that are spiraling us down. And I think that's what I see in the Bible. That's what I see Paul doing. And what Paul is encouraging through the Bible, and there's a lot of stuff that's in the Bible that matches up with a lot of the therapy models. We just don't often make the connection, but I see them. And so what Paul is doing, you know, the whole renewing our minds so that we're transformed, mm-hmm. what he's saying is we are resetting the locus of control so that we are not driven by external locus of control, the circumstances, but we are driven by a different reality and a different purpose and a different renewing hope and love in Jesus. And so because the thing about depression and anxiety and all those kinds of factors, that there's a pain, and that pain creates an illusion of a negative self-view of others and even God, which makes us in the end feel defeated and we're in despair. And then we find ourselves having to work for God to maybe show up. And I think this is, and that kind of perspective and all those things, again, like we talked about earlier, it has a physical response. So the narrative and all those things that are going on in the, from a neuroscience aspect, all of that gets embodied in our physical bodies. So you start seeing a nervous system embody those narratives. You see that a neuroendocrine collapse, and you start seeing all kinds of other factors, even genetic reactions. But when you change the environment in the mind, you change the environment in the body, and you see people's lives restored. So it's really looking at all of those things from the, hey, you know, some of those pros can help you with those tools for regaining and resetting that locus of control. And here's what's really cool about this locus of control and this having this perspective, because the research shows over and over, people who have been through extreme trauma and difficulties in their lives, when if they have this locus of control, they are extremely resilient. And so, and they're able to move on and build a successful life. And I don't mean like riches or anything like that, but a life that has quality. And I think that's why looking at this subject or these things, we don't just say, hey, just go see a doctor and see a therapist. Hey, let's look at the whole process here and realize it's a process, not just a 1-2-3 plan and we're done.
Yeah, that just reminds me how incredibly powerful the mind is when you say, you know, for example, there's a will, there's a way. When you tell yourself you're going to do something and you're that committed, like when you were talking about having goals and preparing yourself for them, like a runner will, it's incredible how much you can accomplish and achieve with those mindsets and that perspective of, yeah, I can do anything with Jesus. And my hope is that one day everything's going to be perfect, but for now it's not. And I'm living for Christ and I'm going to do my best to please him despite persecution, knowing that we're just going through what Jesus had to go through, if not, maybe not even as bad as what he had to go through. And yeah, so keeping those perspectives, and from all the research I've done, I can concur that yes, isolation and loneliness lead to depression, which can only really be cured by meaningful connection and being in community with people who really care about you. And so I'm glad that you shared all of that. Super, super good points. And we are coming to the end of our time today. So I just want to really quick, if our listeners want to connect with you online with the Grace Alliance and anything like that, where should they go?
Yeah, they can find us on the internet, obviously, and we are at mentalhealthgracealliance.org. We've got great blogs. We have some free resources that you can download that go help you through this whole person kind of journey. And, of course, we have resources as far as groups that are across the nation. You can kind of look up to see if there's one there. But you don't even have to have a group. You can purchase one of our workbooks, and we try to keep everything affordable. And for those that are wanting to start a group, we offer free training, and you just have to go through our online course, and then you can create those communities around you. And then, of course, we're on Facebook and Instagram for some other ongoing encouragement.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, and tune in next time for another episode in our mental health series on the Charisma News podcast.